Today's podcast is brought to you by Draft. If you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try my new favorite app, and that's Draft. It is daily fantasy basketball, but not like the other guys. On Draft, you play real live snake drafts with other people, just like in your season-long leagues. And here's how it works. It is a draft that lasts for just one night, and there's no management. You just set the draft, you pick your players, and you forget it. You just play, and you see if you win. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire, nothing you have to check seven or eight times. Draft even takes care of last-minute injuries for you. Draft starts every few minutes, so you can join one right now. All you need is you can play on your iPhone, on draft.com. It's really easy. And the best part, you can play for cold hard cash. Draft starts from just $1, so there's a draft for anybody. There's no salary cap. You play in a real life snake draft just like you play with your friends in a season long league. So come and join me on Draft today. Download the app at any time. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes. Or play right now from your computer on draft.com. Do what is best for you. And for a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit. That is a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit on Draft. But to do that, you need to use this promo code. That's LOCAVS, L-O-C-A-V-S. That's right. Play a real money game. You could win cold hard cash. Cold hard cash. And who does not want cold hard cash? For free by just using the promo code LOCAVS. And get your first deposit on Draft. Try it out today. It is the best way to play fantasy basketball.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from ForTheSword.com and The Step Back. Joining me today from CBS, it is Chris Barnwell. Chris, how are you?
I would say I'm good, but I'm not as good as I could be.
Oh, boy.
So, I had a medical bill recently, and it's not even the price. It was actually pretty inexpensive considering everything, but that's besides the point. The reason I'm kind of annoyed by it is I got the mail and the letter being like, oh, you have to pay this thing. Like, oh, I guess insurance didn't cover all of it. So I go to the website to go pay for it. There's no way to pay online. I had to mail them my payments. Like, it's 1980 whatever or 1990 whatever. Who still does that? I'm upset.
You have an archaic hospital. I understand. Like that's not yeah. Good. I could at my Cleveland Clinic, when I make my bills payments, I can do it, and they should totally sponsor this podcast and give me an ad rate for supporting how I'm allowed to pay my medical bills. That's a weird thing. I got followed by the Scaramucci Post today, like the real Scaramucci Post account. So I think my day is weirder. That I'm just gonna one up you.
No one's gonna have as weird a day as Carter Rodriguez.
Look, just go to @Carter_Shade on Twitter. That's all I'm going to tell you, listeners. But Chris is here to talk about the Cavs, talk about the Hornets, who the Cavs are playing on Wednesday. Chris, before we get into the Hornets, what do you make of this 7-7 Cavs team so far?
Stupid. Just also stupid.
The Knicks game was just one of the dumbest basketball games I've ever
watched. I loved it so much. Their defense is abysmally bad. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a defense this bad from a team I consider actually good. Just like, it's amazing how bad they are on defense. Like, we post a GIF sometimes in Slack and like stuff they're doing. There was one where we literally had to debate for about 10 minutes. Are they playing zone or are they playing man? And someone just got caught ball watching. Like, it was an actual debate of just how confusing it all looked.
Yeah, right now the Cavs have a defensive rating of 111.1. That is almost 2 points worse. It's 1.9 points worse than the Dallas Mavericks.
And on the plus side, I think they're still scoring a lot. It's just not enough.
Third in offensive rating, so they have a negative net rating of 2.9 because their defense is so bad.
So when Isaiah Thomas gets back, theoretically, like this, they should be able to score more and finally outscore people. Theoretically.
He'll actually work on defense, where Derrick Rose is just useless.
And Jose Calderon has his entire career has just been, well, yeah. If he exists, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Does Jose Calderon actually exist, or is he just a theory or a fever dream we all kind of came up with? Imagine if the Cavs signed Jose Calderon at midnight on free agency night.
He's always the first guy to high five LeBron, so there's that at least.
Oh, he's got the news that Jonas Valanciunas role.
Yeah, but like not useful and not like a franchise legend. Chris, fill in the blank. After LeBron James, the second best Cleveland Cavalier this season has been.
Oh no, Jeff Green might be the answer.
Which is a problem in its own right. That like he might be the answer.
Either him or Iman Shumpert.
Oh man, see, I would have gone with. I think it's Korver.
My issue with Korver is just I feel like when I watch them, this is more. I try to watch the whole NBA, so obviously I can't watch every single minute of every Cavs game, but I feel like he's just a little too inconsistent to say that right now.
Yeah, I might be tilted by the two like big fourth quarters he's had. Kevin Love like should be this answer, but like he's had just a couple really bad games. The next game he was an awful lot. In my player grades, I gave him an F. Like he deserves an F. He was so bad.
It's bothering me. I just aggregated a thing about LeBron saying how he's excited about Isaiah Thomas coming back because he hasn't had a secondary creator for him basically all season, not since Irving was gone. You know,
oh, I he's see. Always... I took that as Kyrie shade.
I didn't take it as Kyrie shade because if you read kind of what's around it, Howard Beck is very adamant to point out that LeBron's always had a secondary creator with him. He even mentioned Irving as one of those players he had. He mentioned Miami Dwayne Wade. When he's won titles, he had a secondary creator. So I took it more as that's how this season is going as opposed to how previous seasons have gone. But really, as I was aggregating it and reading it and writing about it, all I could think of was, why is Kevin Love not playing this secondary creator role? Like, they clearly need a secondary creator. We know Love can be a creator, and from what we saw in Minnesota, he doesn't have to run everything, but it's the secondary role. He's a good enough passer. I don't understand why I don't use him in that role more. And I understand that you don't want him playing something now that he's going to have to drastically change in January when Isaiah Thomas gets back, but they can't even, like, you know, try it a little?
Well, Love should still be good at that when Isaiah comes back because Isaiah is really fast. He wasn't just an isolation scorer with Boston. He was someone that moves around, someone that cut, someone that did work off the ball, and I think that would help maximize Love. And I know Jonathan Charks from The Ringer had a piece up today that recommend people go read about Love not being Minnesota Love anymore and how that maybe isn't something the Cavs really even need, but a version of it I think would be helpful.
Yeah, I'm not saying he has to go out there and run the entire offense, or they should be putting the ball in his hands. Like,
but he should maybe be doing that when like it's him and Dwayne Wade. You know, like when it's that situation, like maybe he should be, so it's not Wade posting up and trying to run the offense with Jeff Green. Like maybe that's a workable way to kind of get some of it. But it also is interesting because LeBron like coveted Love when they played together in Team USA, and you know it makes you wonder if he wanted Kevin Love that was playing in that tournament that maybe it wasn't doing what he did in Minnesota versus what he was in Minnesota and what he was when the Cavs traded for him. And maybe that was something that had to kind of get worked out, and it is what it is at this point.
And I really thought, like, I'm not trying to harp on an old thing because I'm sure this has been debated just forever, like, in all of his time in Cleveland. But I always thought part of the reason they didn't go with that was, well, why would you have him create out of, like, the high post or whatever when Kyrie Irving is just as great as he is with the ball in his hands and you have all these players that, you know, you can kick out to and they can run this five-out style. But I figured when Irving left, I was like, okay, well, this is a chance for them to really use Love, and just they haven't really embraced that.
Yeah, I think it's probably ship sailed at this point. Before we continue here, letting you know that today's podcast is part of the whole Lockdown Network, as always, and you can find every Lockdown NBA podcast on iTunes. Just search Lockdown NBA, and you get every team feed. So if you want Lockdown Hornets for this week, it'll be in that one feed. Chris, what is the story so far of the 17-18 Hornets team? They are 15th in net rating, which feels appropriate for them. They're losers of four straight, however. What is going on with this Hornets team?
The injuries kind of have defined them. They haven't had Nicholas Batum all season long. He's actually apparently going to come back for the Cleveland game, which is shocking because a lot of people thought he might miss the entire first half of the season, or at least into the new year. They missed Cody Zeller briefly. Michael Carter-Williams was hurt. They even signed this guy out of Europe, Julian Stone, who was supposed to be the third tier point guard, and he got hurt. So Kemba Walker was the only point guard on the roster for a little bit of time. And just those injuries have kind of impacted them in a way that's made them not mediocre, but kind of average. You see it in the net rating. They ran into a lot of really good teams, but before that they were playing really well. They're one of those teams that just, they play well and you're like, wow, this team's playing really well, but they keep losing. So maybe Batum is going to help them kind of figure that out. Their offense is kind of in a pit right now. Really, the defense is more concerning to me because it's kind of average. And they're still trying to work stuff out. Dwight Howard's been shockingly great with how he almost looks like Orlando Joy. He hasn't looked this good since Houston. And Kemba Walker's been incredible. Just they have to kind of figure out everything else around that. And I feel like once they get some of these starter players back, like Batum, kind of to help out, take the load off Walker and kind of help out. And then kind of send some of those young guys like Dwayne Bacon and Malik Monk down to the bench where they're not going to be as impactful, needed to be as impactful as they've been. And that'll kind of raise up the team as a whole.
The four-game losing streak, was that simply a product? They're playing really good teams and are kind of just having to travel and do all this different stuff that makes it hard to win games? Or was there something as a through line of those four games that you think maybe was an indicator of an issue they're facing right now?
I think it's mainly good teams. I don't think they should have lost the Knicks at all. That game was something they should have won. Boston was winnable, and they let that go late, so... These aren't games that you can just write off as completely as, oh, well, they were playing good teams, and when you're not a good team, you lose to good teams. But they were winnable games that they did not finish off. But at the same time, I just can't put too much stock into the fact that they played Minnesota, New York, and Boston and San Antonio all on the road, and just not many teams go on winning streaks early in the season against those guys. Like, Minnesota was, before they went on this recent kind of dip they've been on, was one of the top teams in the West for a brief period of time. The Knicks might be legitimate, which Kristaps Porzingis just blew up at the end of that game.
He's so good. Like, he's just absurd at what he's doing right now. And, like, the Cavs had no answer for him on either end of the floor. He took away Kevin Love on offense from a lot of that game as well. Enes Kanter kind of did too, which is weird. And when he was hitting his shots, the Cavs had no one to guard him. Like, Jay Crowder was trying to guard him, and there's only so much a 6'6", 6'7", forward going to be able to do against a 7'3", unicorn. And, like, even the Hornets, who have longer guys who have a really good team defensive structure.
He made Marvin Williams' life a living hell the entire night. Marvin Williams, who is a legitimately good player, had nothing for him. He couldn't. He was gone. Because Porzingis just ruined him. He made his night terrible. And they tried putting Dwight Howard on him, and that kind of worked, but Porzingis has learned the art of Manu Ginobili and Vlade Divac. I'll flop like a fish and hit the ground as hard as possible. So he's going to hurt himself doing that, by the way. I'm very concerned about him.
Yeah. No, like, I agree.
He hits the ground so hard. He, like, hits it. And you hear the thump, you're like, dude, you're going to kill yourself just to draw one foul that you might get.
Yeah.
Stop, man.
He's got the elbow issue and whatnot. How will Nick Batum? This you can't expect a ton of him necessarily because of it. It's his first game back. It is his first action. He's coming off an injury wasn't not serious. So what can Nick Batum and what will Nick Batum bring this Hornet team when he's actually healthy and when he is doing Nick Batum things, and is just actually kind of integrated back into what they're doing?
A secondary creator, which they desperately need, just, you know, to take the load off Kemba Walker. That's always been kind of the case with Walker, where he's a really good creator when you take some of the pressure off of him and some of the load off of him, as most really good creators are. Even saw last year with, I would argue that James Harden is probably the best creator in the NBA. Maybe LeBron has a case for that as well. And we saw last year that even Harden had these times where it's like he really could use someone else to kind of help him out here. Mm-hmm. And Kemba has that in Batum. Batum is not going to be the player he was when he first got there in Charlotte and inked that huge contract. He's not going to peel off screens and hit insane one-footed three-pointers anymore. That's just, he can't do that for an entire season. It's not sustainable. What he can do is run the offense. He can go and be a secondary creator for the bench unit when Kemba's on the floor. And when Kemba's off the floor, the offense isn't going to tank anymore. Let me look this up really quick, but I'm pretty sure when Kemba's off the floor, like, their offense is just pitifully bad. Like, even worse than what it is. They're already, like, 21st in the NBA right now, and I think when Kemba's off the floor, they fall, like, the worst in the NBA.
Which makes sense, because Kemba is this incredible point guard. He is just fantastic at what he does. While Chris is looking that up, as a quick reminder, if you submit a 5-star rating and review on this podcast right now on iTunes, and you email that a picture of that review to lockedoncavs@gmail.com, you could win a copy of The Blueprint by Jason Lloyd or a Mood t-shirt from Breaking Tea, which the great Jay Skeets actually tweeted a link to that, so shouts to Skeets for tweeting that out. But you can win one of those, just leave a 5-star rating and review, send it to lockedoncavs@gmail.com, and you can win something cool. The Kemba thing and what he's just going to do, like I think the Cavs are going to have a very hard time guarding him. I think it'd almost be beneficial for the team if Derrick Rose is not back. If Iman Shumpert is there, he can at least be a body on him, and JR can probably defend him as well. But they've asked Iman Shumpert to do that, and it's worked fairly well, reasonably. But I think Kemba is probably the guy on this team that the Cavs are going to have the hardest in dealing with. We'll get to Dwight Howard in a minute, but Kemba is just the engine of everything Charlotte does. And it would make a ton of sense to me when he's off that they just plateau and are just a completely worse and problematic team.
It's worse than I thought. On the floor, his on-floor net rating is 9.8. They have an offensive rating of 110, which for non-stats people, that means basically every 100 possessions, they score 110 points. That's the equivalence of that.
So if that was 110 rating for context, if it was 110 points, that would be the second best in the league.
If they just played that for an entire game.
Yeah, that would be 0.1 better than the Houston Rockets and a full 6 points worse than the Golden State Warriors, because the Warriors are just absurd.
Now that's not sustainable because their team, like Kemba's not playing 48 minutes a night, and in the Warriors' case or the Rockets' case, James Harden and Steph Curry aren't playing 48 minutes a night. But in a vacuum, that just kind of puts it into context. Off the floor, he has a net. The team has a net rating of -24 and an offensive rating of 84.7.
It shouldn't shock people that would be the worst
on the team by far.
Yeah, and if that was a team, that would, like, think about this: Chicago Bulls, the worst team in the league, probably at least in my power rankings. And shouts to my power rankings brother Chris, who also does them. You know they're difficult. 93.8. Offensive rating for the Bulls is the worst in the league, and if you're looking at net rating, the worst in the league is the Bulls at -12.4. So like that's insanely bad. That is just awful and unplayable and unmanageable, really, against better teams.
They need him so bad, which is why I think Batum is so important to them, because they just need something to let in this. Every team is worse without their best players. 24 points worse? That's just, it's absurd. And that's the kind of situation they're in. And you're right that if Cleveland's going to have a chance of beating them, which they will just because they're Cleveland, but if they're going to beat them, it all comes down to, you know, basically capitalizing when Kemba Walker's off the floor. Because honestly, unless LeBron decides to do what he did against Kristaps Porzingis in the fourth quarter the other night and actually care enough to shut him down completely himself, he is going to cook everyone you throw on him. Everyone. There was a point in the Bucks game where they threw like four different guys on him and he cooked all of them in a row. Just every single one of them. Giannis, Brogdon, it didn't matter. Just they threw guys on him. He was like, "Nope, I'm going to make your ankles look like mush."
He's that good. People have underrated Kemba Walker for a long time. He's very, very good. Dwight Howard, the big offseason acquisition in Charlotte, the always interesting Dwight Howard, came from a weird situation in Atlanta, came from that weird situation in Houston, has not really had a normal situation really since Orlando, and somewhere where he felt like he wasn't a big storyline. What has Dwight Howard been this year as he tries to kind of reinvent himself under Steve Clifford?
I want to say reinvent himself. He's more just kind of going back to what he did well in Orlando and some of the early seasons in Houston. Steve Clifford was his coach in Orlando as an assistant. He coached him in Los Angeles the 1 year he was there too. So no one, in my opinion, except maybe Stan Van Gundy, understands how to coach Dwight Howard better than Steve Clifford. And right now he's seeing a lot of success in that. He's running him in the pick and roll. Kemba Walker is finding these great lanes for him to roll into, and he's finding them. Kemba Walker, I think, had some really interesting quotes to the Charlotte Observer about how he's never had someone to just kind of throw the ball up into the air and on catch on a lob and dunk it down. Like, he's never had that before. So that's something new for him. There's still issues in the fact that he still thinks he can post players up, and I don't know if that's a him thing or a Steve Clifford thing. It's probably a him thing, knowing his history. throw him on. He'll post the guy up traditionally, you know, that old fashioned Al Jefferson, Shaquille O'Neal, give me the ball, isolation. You know, it's terrible. It just doesn't work anymore. A lot of people say he never had it. He did used to have it in Orlando because he was big and strong and athletic. He just doesn't have that anymore, and it never works. He just can't do that anymore. So there are still moments where he does that, but the successes so far are so much more important and better for them than the failures of those post-ups.
When I've watched them play, his chemistry with Kemba in the pick and roll has been impressive. He doesn't seem like he's trying to, like you mentioned the post-ups, but it doesn't seem like he's trying to do significantly more or try to like force himself in. Like it seems like he's being accommodating to what they're doing, and that's important for a guy like Dwight. That in this NBA, he's just not as valuable. Like what he does is still has value if he's in the right headset and is in the right situation. And it seems like at least the Hornets can maximize him in ways that make sense, because Cody Zeller, like, he's a Zeller brother, and we can joke about him and everything, but he's good.
Like, Cody Zeller's excellent.
Like, people, like, when you get Dwight Howard in, it means adjusting Cody Zeller's minutes and maybe cutting Cody Zeller's minutes. That's not necessarily a straight-up win in 2017, which is a weird thing to say considering Dwight has the name, but it's reality, and it seems to at least worked out.
Speaking of Zeller, it's been kind of odd because I thought he was going to be someone that's just going to feast on second units. This probably has to do with the fact that he's probably not playing with Kemba Walker as much as he should be. But again, that's the effect of the fact that they really don't have a second point guard right now. I mean, Michael Carter Williams has played 3 games. But his net rating on the floor is a negative 9.1. So that's kind of an issue because I know he's a good player. I know that what he can do is good. He just needs someone to get him the ball and put him in those situations to succeed. Because while he's a good player, he's not like... I would say that Tristan Thompson is a player that no matter where you throw him on any roster in the league, more often than not, he's going to find ways to succeed. He's going to pull down rebounds. He's going to protect the rim when he's motivated. He's going to do what's necessary. Cody Zeller, I think, is a player that can still do a lot of stuff that he does well no matter where he is. But to be at his best, he needs a point guard that's going to get him the ball and get him in situations where he can succeed.
Yeah, they're not exactly Darren Williams, but someone like Darren Williams would be very welcome, it feels like, on that roster. Like just having a point guard that can competently dribble and pass the ball and look like an NBA player.
I was saying they should have gone after Eric Bledsoe for no other reason than just stagger him with a second unit, because like they needed a point guard so bad.
He can play two guard, and like if Batum's hurt, right, and like that could be helpful.
And they could have gone after Jameer Nelson. There's just been a lot of guards where just they really needed someone and they just haven't picked them up. I really hope Batum helps them, because just their offense is without Kemba.
I feel like this what I'm about to say will send that more into like an 8-tweet rant about teams should have signed Jameer Nelson, but like the Hornets should have signed Jameer Nelson just because he's a competent guard. The Pelicans signing Jameer Nelson is very weird to me just because of who they have, and like, do you really need another like one? Like, did you?
Yeah, like, I get that they needed him at the time, but now they have like too many because Rondo's back.
Yeah, I mean, like maybe like because you're gonna have to play Rondo, and I'd rather have Jameer, but yeah, Jameer's good. You know, like, Jameer's a good player. He's good with the Nuggets last year. He still has some basketball in him, and a team like the Hornets, I think you're right, like could have certainly Mac like used him, and if that helps you, the Cavs can you kind of need that guy to dribble and be competent in those situations, or at least so like your best player doesn't have to do it all the time. Last question. The key matchup in this game between the Cavs and the Hornets is what?
Kemba Walker. I said it earlier. If Cleveland's going to win by a lot, they need to just eviscerate the Hornets anytime Kemba Walker's off the floor. If they can do that, they could win by 20. If not, it's going to be a lot closer than it should, because when they have Kemba, they're just an actually competent, very talented team that just performs well. But he's really the difference between, oh, and I guess Cleveland effort too, but that's a given any night. So
yeah,
but so really it just all comes down to how are you going to act when Kemba Walker's on the floor versus when he's off the floor. If you can just destroy them when he's not playing, like they could dominate them. They could easily win by a lot.
Yeah, I agree with that. My other one is related to that. It's Dwight Howard and Kevin Love. These are guys that do different things. They're going to push each other in different ways. How does Kevin Love hang against Dwight? How does he defend the pick and roll against Dwight? The Cavs do a lot of hedging. They do a lot of where Love comes up and tries to use his arm and bump the guy with the ball, and then he has to recover. Is that gonna, if Kemba's on and Kemba's be able to find Dwight in the middle with no other big there, no other like great help side defender there, how are the Cavs gonna deal with that when Love physically, like, Dwight's not, you know, peak Dwight necessarily anymore in that way, but like, how do you compensate for that when that has been a successful play for Charlotte and it's a weakness on your team? So like, how do you deal with that? And can Love just look like a good player? Like, he was so bad against the Knicks. Him having a good game would go a long way against Charlotte if he can just make Dwight's life hard. And if that happens, then the Cavs, I think, in a situation where they can do that. And depending on when Kemba subs out, that'll be interesting too. Like, is it when it's LeBron and bench units, or is it Wade and Jeff Green and Kyle Korver at the start of the second quarter? When are those going to happen? And how do we see? Does Lou adjust? Does Clifford adjust? Like, how does those little machinations work itself out in over the course of 48 minutes?
They could not be putting Derrick Rose and Jose Calderon on Kemba. It will be a disaster.
Calderon is banned to the bench. I don't think he's going to play.
I know. I was just like, who is even their backup point guard? I'm running that through my head. I think it's like Shumpert.
It is Amon Shumpert.
That's what I thought. Shumpert can actually competently defend, so.
He's been, like, the Knicks game was bad, but he's been, the other two games, I thought he was really, really good and has played within himself in a way he hasn't always done. If Derrick Rose plays, we'll see. I think it'll be a game time decision. It seems like he came back too early from his ankle. I've said this 1,000 times already. I don't think he fits on the scene that well anyway, but they have him, so I guess you kind of have to make it work with him. It'd be a victory if he doesn't play, honestly. But I'm going to say that a lot.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, let's say he doesn't play. If he plays, is that good or bad?
I mean, I think it's good. I think. Hurt. Yeah. I mean, if he misses Wednesday, that would already be his 8th missed game out of 15 games.
Ugh.
It's been what he is, and I think even if you're a defender of his in terms of as a player, I think the concern with him always has to be, is he going to be healthy? And he's not been healthy, and that's just what he is. And he's already limited. He's already has these issues that were what he is at this point in his career, but the health thing is always going to be the biggest thing with him, because if he's not on the court, then what's even the point of trying to rehab him?
I agree.
Chris Barnwell, CBSSports.com. You can find all of his writing there. He does the NBA Power Rankings. Chris, anything you have in the cooker or up right now that people should just go check out?
Go yell at me about Power Rankings. That's what everyone does.
I'm going to ask you this. How much time does it take you to do Power Rankings? I want to compare notes.
I usually start working on them on Friday if I have the time.
God. I'm jealous.
Yeah, I start like putting the teams together, kind of. I get an idea of where I think teams are, because usually I have at least an okay idea of, okay, I think they're going to be somewhere in this range. Then by Saturday, I actually start ranking them and writing blurbs, because a couple teams usually by Saturday night have like finished their games for the week. Not everyone plays on Sundays. And then by Sunday is usually, I usually spend almost all Sunday like actually writing blurbs and writing it and getting it put together.
Yeah, I try to start on Saturday is usually my goal. Try to start writing on Saturday. I have notes all week, and then I have a notepad where I kind of write out what I had last week and then move teams around, and it looks like a crazy person's doodles by the end of the week. But
I have an Excel spreadsheet to let me keep an eye on where teams have been, where they've been, if they're going up or down.
Yeah, that's probably something I should do. But I'm trying to like do this like holistic, like not like on my computer screen all day thing. And that's like my compensation, but it's maybe not the best method. But they're hard. Power rankings are hard.
I agree with you. Chicago is easily the worst team. Like, they have the same amount of wins as Atlanta. And for my blurb for them, I still think this is like a comfortable gap between them and Atlanta and how much worse they are.
Yeah, I feel like I flip the Mavs and the Bulls every week in my head. Because the Mavs at least have played hard in some games, but oh my god, that team is awful. And Dirk,
they're awful. I think I bumped them up like to 28th or 27th this week, only because they looked competent. Like, they were in close games as opposed to Chicago and Atlanta, who just looked terrible at every game they played.
Yeah, the Mavs at least like have got some competency, and like they almost beat the Cavs, but I mean, it feels like everyone's doing that.
Atlanta is kind of the same way, where I'm just like, this team isn't actually any good or anything. Just Budenholzer's system is so effective that they're able to stay in games on that alone.
Yeah, I mean, the Nets and Pacers have elements of that as well. It's a weird time to be the bottom of the league because the Bulls are the real incompetent.
That's the thing. I feel like if you're going to be a bad team, a lot of teams, what they'll try and do, the Magic made this mistake when they tried to be bad. is they just go bad and go, okay, we'll figure out the other stuff later. I really think you should have a good idea of what kind of team you want to be before you even start the rebuild. Like, I think you can adjust on the fly. You can be like Milwaukee or who's another bad team that kind of got good lately? Milwaukee's a good example. You can be like Milwaukee and kind of adjust on the fly when you get like, okay, we got a Giannis. We can adjust and make him the point guard. Now, you can adjust to that later. You should really have a system that you kind of want to work with early on, because then you can kind of build towards that, and, you know, it makes you competent in games, makes you competitive, and gives you actually actual development, as opposed to the Magic's rebuild plan under Rob Hennigan, which was just throw them all out there and see what we get, and then all of a sudden none of your young guys are actually getting any better because there's nothing for them to work towards.
Yeah, I mean, like with the Rockets, too, we'll wrap it up on this, like the Rockets, you know, they got Harden and then they built around that guy. So can you do that, or can you do that as well with some player? Can you get a Giannis and then supplement him with what he's doing and build around that one guy? Chris Barnwell, CBSSports.com. Check him out on Twitter at, I think it's at Chris Barnwell or at Chris _ Barnwell. I don't remember.
It's Chris Barnwell.
Yeah.
At Chris Barnwell.
Yeah, follow him on Twitter. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of Cavs Hornets. We'll see how the Cavs look against a very good, solid Hornets team that kind of just always seems to be tough for the Cavs to play. And see how they defend Kemba Walker and Dwight Howard in the pick and roll. But this has been Locked on Cavs, and have a good Wednesday.